I'm Brad.
And I'm Alyssa.
And we're Strange for History, a podcast where we talk about, you guessed it,
strange history.
This week, we take a journey through time and back to France in World War I, where you'll learn all about a special group of American soldiers nicknamed the Harlem Hellfighters, an all-African-American regiment under the command of the French Army.
You say take a trip back in time like we don't do that every episode? Welcome to being a historian?
It's fun to say, damn it.
Okay.
Learn about how strong a friendship can be, just apparently not this one today, a bully. And learn about how racism divides brothers in arms. We'll also go on to discuss two very highly decorated soldiers of this very important group.
Episode 46, Hell Fought.
In October of 1917, the secretary of Booker T. Washington, a man by the name of Emmett J. Scott, would be given a new job as the special assistant to the United States Secretary of War. His job was a simple one, but an extremely important one. As racism in the United States ran rampant, it was interesting that his position was even a thing, but there was no better man for the job. Emmett would be in charge of giving advice to the leaders of the American military in regards to the well-being of its African-American troops throughout the course of the First World War. All 10 million of them. Many would-be soldiers would find themselves barred from military service due to racial discrimination. But that would change when the United States realized that it did not have enough soldiers to fight the war, which would result in the Selective Service Act being passed, forcing all men ages 21 to 30 to enlist for the draft. And this absolutely included African-American men as well. Many now believed and hoped that racial tensions that they would experience would melt away with military service under their belt. But that would unfortunately not be the case. In fact, racial tensions would be at their highest following the First World War and would not see a decline until the events of World War II. On October 8, 1917, the 369th Infantry would be formed and sent to Camp Wadsworth in South Carolina to receive combat training. And when they arrived, they would almost immediately begin to see the racial discrimination from the local community, as well as their fellow soldiers, which came to a definite shock to the unit. Two men from the 15th Regiment of the 369th would meet major issues when a local hotel owner refused to sell them a newspaper. Surprisingly, white soldiers from the 27th Infantry stood up for their brothers, but a lieutenant would step in and stop things from getting out of hand. Slowly, the 27th began standing up more and more for the 15th, even when they were not around, and even went as far as threatening local shop owners to close their stores if they did not treat with and sell things to the 15th. I found a few different sources for that. One thing mentioned very heavily local butcher shops refusing to sell meat to the African-American soldiers, and the white soldiers would go and just casually threaten to burn down the butcher shop, which, a vibe.
No, yeah, same.
Racism is not fun, and these guys just took that to a massive extreme. It's really not that bad of an extreme when you think about it. 2 months later, in December, the 369th would finally be given the opportunity to fight. Colonel William Hayward would sponsor the 369th, as was tradition, and the 15th Regiment would leave the United States on December 27th, heading to France. The infantry unit, however, would see discrimination even there and would not be allowed to participate in combat missions whatsoever, instead being forced into laborer positions, which would last nearly a year before something would inevitably and finally change. In April of 1918, the unit would change assignment and be given to the command of the French Army, and they would stay under the command of the French for the remainder of the war. Due to the fact that most American soldiers refused to fight alongside African-American troops. The unit would be outfitted in the standard French fashion with helmets, belts, pouches, trench coats, and would even fight with French-made weaponry. But they would still wear their United States Army uniforms under the rest of their gear.
Other than, like, outfitting them with all of this gear and giving them weapons and stuff, they actually taught them basic French.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
They had to understand the commands from the French officers. And so for these men that they were training and giving all of these things to, they taught them the French word, like, for different commands.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
I
mean, they knew a little bit of French.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it's just something that completely skipped my mind.
Yeah. No, they taught them a little bit of French.
Interesting. The unit would go on to see heavy combat at the Second Battle of the Marne?
Well, I don't know. I don't speak French.
And would then be reassigned to go on a counterattack. They would see 6 consecutive months of nonstop combat, the longest of any Allied force through the course of the entire war. In September of 1918, the group, now referred to as the Harlem Hellfighters, would organize with the French to assault the village of Chaillot and would become so bloodthirsty that they would charge ahead of the rest of their allies. And the French on the left and right-hand side simply could not keep up with their American friends. By the time the group finally managed to slow down and let the other soldiers catch up, they had advanced 8.5 miles into German territory.
They were running.
They were.
Same as the cat. Just ran by.
No, yeah, they were gone. They didn't stop for anything. On November 26th, the Hellfighters would become the first Allied troops to reach the Rhine River.
Jeez.
15 days after the Armistice Agreement. They just kept right on.
What is the Armistice Agreement for someone who did not pay attention while learning about World War I?
That's a fantastic question.
I know. Aren't you so glad I asked? You just know this off the top of your head, don't you?
I'm so glad that I knew this off the top of my head and knew that you would be asking.
See, yeah, I'm just trying to look out for the fellow listener that didn't pay attention in history class.
Oh, absolutely.
I minored in the whole thing and was just like, I don't need any of this later. I'm not going to start a podcast or anything.
So, shut up. The Armistice was an agreement to cease hostilities, but it was not a surrender. Germany did not surrender. They were just like, hey, we're not going to try and fight you anymore.
Can you, like, chill for, like, 5 minutes, bro? Yeah. Is that really what it was?
Yeah, basically, like, dude, we're so tired of being shot at and being killed. Can you just, like, maybe not? And everybody else involved was like, oh, yeah, we can do that. And then they just kept right on going on. The Germans were like, whoa, man, this is too much. We're still not going to surrender, though. The official surrender date for World War I that just doesn't seem right. Because it's saying the armistice was the same date as the official surrender, which we just covered, was not. Anyway, it was like a mini surrender.
A mini surrender.
Let's go with that. It was a
it was a dude, chill out for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was a mini surrender. Well, that's embarrassing. I didn't think you were going to ask about the armistice.
I figured you knew off the top of your head and you didn't have to Google it.
I didn't figure that would be asked about. Honestly, I can't even spell that word. I have to autocorrect it. I don't know how to spell armistice. I'm probably not even pronouncing that right.
Let's just continue with the story.
We're just going to continue. The French government would bestow many awards upon the Hellfighters overall, including the Croix de Guerre to 170 individual soldiers, the first being Henry Johnson, nicknamed the Black Death.
Did you know that Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts were the first Americans to ever receive the Croix de Guerre? Guerre? Guerre?
I know that first word is Croy because of the drink. And the second word is day because day. I do not know about that other one. I don't speak French. I speak German and most English. The unit would serve in engagements such as Belleau Wood and would see an overall unit citation and even a few medals of honor being awarded to its members. Arthur Little, the battalion commander, would note that the group spent 191 days in nonstop consecutive 24-hour combat.
Oh my god.
They never retreated a single foot, and they never had a permanent prisoner of war. There was two occasions, when German troops did capture some of the guys from the Harlem Hellfighters. But these guys were so insistent on protection of their brothers that they just got them back. They would fight through German lines to get their friends and just not give up an inch of ground. They just kept fighting.
There's a specific instance that we're going to talk about.
There is.
In regards to that.
Now, the Hellfighters would go on to achieve all missions to absolute completion once assigned, with the exception of one that everyone agreed was because the French, and I'm so sorry if we have French listeners, fucked up the artillery barrage so badly that they just couldn't do their job. They were told to shell a target and then go and take it, and they just shelled it nonstop to the point where there was nothing to take. Every unit has its heroes, and the Hellfighters were no different.
But before we talk about this particular event that makes them heroes, we should talk about who they were first.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. We want background before we dive into the different sources that we have for this.
And you know me. So we'll start with Henry Johnson, since we've mentioned him already. He was born on July 15th in 1892 in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. His family later moved to Albany, New York, and he had tons of jobs as a teen. He was a soda mixer, a coal yard laborer, a chauffeur, and a red cap porter at Albany's Union Station. On June 5th, 1917, Henry enlisted in Company C, 15th New York Infantry Regiment, which later turned into the Harlem Hellfighters. And then he went to war. And that is literally all of his background until after the war. Kind of the same thing with Needham. Not a whole lot about his early life. Needham was born on April 28th, 1901 in Trenton, New Jersey. And his father was a local pastor. When he was a teen, he worked as a drugstore clerk. And he actually joined the Army when he was underage. He was only 16 at the time, and he lied to the recruiter and said that he was 19 years old.
That happens.
Hey, when you're called to fight, you're called to fight.
Absolutely.
Now let's talk about the story.
And is that all you have for these guys?
That is all they have until after this incident. There's not a whole lot known about their early life.
Okay, so the incident. Dun, dun, dun. On May 14th, 1918, William Henry Johnson was on watch in the Argonne Forest when he and his combat partner, his battle buddy, Needham Roberts, came under attack by a German patrol. Alyssa and I have found different numbers for this German patrol. I found anywhere from 24 to 36.
And I found 12 to 25.
So numbers are not important here.
An average of 20.
Yes. Let's go with a minimum of 22.
Yeah.
That seems like a good number. The two men would be approached and assaulted by this German patrol, and seeking aid, Johnson ordered Roberts to retreat to the French lines and inform them of the attack.
Oh, I might have a little bit more info than you for once.
You very well may.
Oh my gosh.
Do you want to do this instead?
I think I have more.
Well then, take it away.
So, they were on watch, right?
Right.
And Needham is the one who heard, like, they were staring off into the distance of the night, right? It's about 2 a.m. And he said something felt off about the darkness. Like, there was something wrong with it. And they listened. And when they were listening very closely, they heard what sounded like wire cutters cutting the fence.
Cutting wires.
Yeah. And then they actually started getting shot at by German snipers. So what Henry did, after he told Needham to run back to camp, they had set up a box of grenades nearby, and he threw a grenade at the fence line. And that was how they lit up to see who was out there.
Interesting.
Isn't it? They had to sort of wait and adjust their eyes. This obviously caused more gunfire to outbreak. Enemy grenades were now hurling Henry's way. Needham did not make it back to camp because when all of that started to break out, he ran back to help Henry.
Well, right. You gotta keep your combat buddy safe.
For sure. Needham was actually hit with a grenade.
Like, they just tossed it in his chest or like...
It exploded. He got an arm and a hip injury that was so bad that he couldn't actually continue fighting.
Gotcha. So... Dehabilitation.
Yes.
Gotcha.
You kind of talk about after he got injured.
A little bit.
Do you want me to keep telling? You can keep telling. No, it's okay.
You go for it, girl. You are rocking it. You can do the event this time.
So because Needham couldn't actually like physically fight, Henry was like, just hand me grenades, man. So Henry had dragged him over to this trench. You know, grenades run out, their ammo ran out, and he actually, Henry actually took on a lot of bullets himself to his head, his side, and even to one of his hands. And he only stopped shooting when he accidentally grabbed an American clip to put into his French rifle, and it actually ended up jamming the gun. I didn't know there were differences.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I understand they were probably like different makes and models.
Right, different calibers, different sizes. Magwells don't fit in every weapon. They're not interchangeable platforms. It's
guns,
not like
guns,
today.
Guns.
Guns, guns, guns. Beard oil. Here's a history fact.
They actually engaged in hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, because once he ran out of ammo, he just started breaking skulls with that rifle.
He actually splintered the rifles, like, stock.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's how hard he was hitting these motherfuckers.
And then down to a knife.
Yeah,
which
down to a bolo knife.
Till it got so dull he couldn't stab people with it anymore, and then he just threw hands. He beat motherfuckers to death. Probably.
Most likely, but two German soldiers attempted to take Needham hostage, prisoner of war, whatever you want to call it, and Henry was like, no the fuck you're not, and so he just, quote, this is what he said, started hacking away at them with his bolo knife. He stabbed one of them in the stomach. He sliced a lieutenant. And he even got shot by someone's pistol in his arm while he was knifing all these people.
Jesus Christ.
And then a German soldier jumped onto Henry's back and he stabbed him in between the ribs. Wild.
My God.
This was hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, for sure.
And those German soldiers did not get Needham. He actually dragged them away. And they retreated before American and French forces even showed up to help.
It's giving me major Call of Duty vibes. This man is a hacker. He is cheating.
It's called carrying your team.
It's definitely carrying your team. It's what I do.
Same.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, and we can talk about how many people died.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We need to hear
about
that.
Because we have different numbers. So, Henry received 21 wounds, both bullet and shrapnel related. He wounded, from what I read, 10 to 20 of the Germans and killed two of them.
See, I read that he killed four of them and inflicted wounds and injuries to basically the entire group overall.
I mean, 10 to 20, when I have 12 to 25, that's pretty much all of them.
We've got the number locked down. It's at least 22.
Kill an average of three people.
It's
find
a good
the mediums there.
Is that all you have?
Yeah, I thought it was a wild tale, and I didn't know if you were going to talk about it, so I was like, I'll just talk about it.
Fantastic. Well, you did the majority of the work this episode. This is a very Alyssa-heavy episode.
On a topic I didn't pick.
Yeah.
Wow, look at me go. Wow. I did all of this last night, too.
Yeah.
Yours was written in advance. I don't know what you're talking about.
Some of it. At the end... Did you have something else you want to say?
No. What are you going to talk about?
At the end of this whole event, both men would go on to survive with injuries. Johnson would receive over 20 combat-related injuries during the event, but he would not be eligible for the Purple Heart.
He also wasn't eligible for disability.
Yeah.
Neither was Needham.
Or the Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
Because they're African American.
Yep.
That's all it was.
We'll talk more about that in a second.
Hello, lovely humans. Steph here from Creepy Vibes Only, a comedy and horror podcast that covers nothing but the creepiest subjects. Tune in every Monday to get your dose of creepy for the week. Available on all major listening platforms and YouTube. See you soon.
Due to racial stigma, Henry Johnson would be essentially forgotten following the war. He was not eligible for his Purple Heart, his Medal of Honor, disability, which is something I didn't know. Despite the fact that he became the first soldier the French bestowed the Croix de Guerre upon, the American soldiers would essentially abandon him.
I will say that right after the Harlem Hellfighters came home, there was a parade. Not that the parade makes up for, you know, everything that he goes on through later in life, but it was really inspiring to a lot of people, especially Black people in the United States.
Right.
That's how he got his nickname, the Black Death. Henry was the person leading this parade, a 7-mile parade down Fifth Avenue in New York City, and everyone was cheering and calling him the Black Death. He actually got promoted to a sergeant.
Interesting.
Needham was still private first class, but...
Right. Now, Johnson would finally be rewarded his Purple Heart after his death. And he would not get that Purple Heart award until 1996. And I'm thinking he passed away, what, in 1926? 1929.
I will say, Teddy Roosevelt was quoted in saying that Henry was one of the 5 bravest Americans to serve in World War I.
I fully believe it. His Medal of Honor would be awarded to him also posthumously in 2015 by President Barack Obama. A lot of other presidents had actually tried to get that, but it would be blocked. It was something that they just didn't want to do.
Who?
Barack Obama.
No, gave who their Medal of?
Johnson.
Honor?
Henry Johnson.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, more about the racism he faced, like we said, he couldn't get disability, and having the injuries that he had, I mean, his foot, his left foot was half metal, and he still had shrapnel in his body, and he was a laborer before the war.
Right.
He couldn't work, he couldn't support his family, so much so that his wife and children left him, and he passed all by himself on July 1st, 1929, so he was like 30-something.
Yeah, essentially abandoned.
Weirdly enough, he was given a full military funeral, and he's actually buried in the Arlington National Cemetery. His son, his oldest son, had no idea that his father was buried with honors. If you're curious, Section 25, Site 64.
So we're going to go see it?
On a road trip, yeah.
We basically drove for 8 hours when we went to see Moundsville, so...
And when his son found out about the military honors burial, he was quoted as saying, "Learning my father was buried in a place of national honor can be described in just one word, joyful. I am simply joyful." But he didn't know that until 2002.
Oh my God. What do you have about Needham? Anything else about him?
Same thing. He struggled to remain employed due to his injuries, but he did make some income from traveling around and actually lecturing. He recounted a lot of his experiences in war. These were often used on the radio, in newspapers, in magazines, in journals. He even made speeches to help recruit other Black Americans into joining the military during World War II. But no one's really sure if the Army compensated him for that, but they probably didn't. I also know that Henry Johnson's image was used on stamps during that time as well.
Interesting.
Because it was Henry Johnson licked Germans. How many stamps can you lick? Was like the quote or something. Like I said, Needham Roberts was still private first class. He died on April 18th, 1949. He's buried at the Fairmount Cemetery in Newark. Is Newark in New York or New Jersey?
I think Newark's in New Jersey.
I wrote New York. Anyway, I don't know how he died, but one source I found, and I don't super quote me on this because it was just one source, and I tried to Google it. I searched everything. I couldn't find any other information, but it said that he and his wife, Iola, actually committed suicide together. Oh. But there's only one source that says that, and the only other source that says that was using the one source that I found as their source. So
don't take it
as full, but
right.
But he was also given the Purple Heart by I have Bill Clinton.
Yeah, 96 would be Bill Clinton
for their Purple Heart
for
and
the
then
Purple Heart.
Medal of Honor in
2015
with Barack Obama.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Now, after the war, the group of soldiers, the entire regiment, would return to the U.S., and they would be assigned as a coastal artillery unit. And they were designed and dedicated to the protection of the coastlines of the U.S. They'd be broken down more and more and more as the years drug on, and different units, different groups would be divvied up, slashed in half, moved about, until they were, the 369th was just everywhere. They went from basically the New York National Guard to being all over the country for this coastal protection. And once World War II sparked, we drag them all back. We put them all back together, and they would be redeployed to the Pacific Theater. Once in the Pacific Theater, the fall from glory that the 369th had would come very fast and very hard. They went from being an incredibly highly decorated unit of professional, amazingly successful soldiers to basically glorified security guards. They were responsible for mop-up patrols, which were basically following the quote-unquote real military behind, and they were responsible just for cleaning up messes that the other guys left. They were glorified janitors. They were glorified security guards. They would see incredibly limited combat through their entire deployment.
So their downfall has nothing to do with the men. It has everything to do with the U.S. Army.
Yes.
Gotcha.
It deals with the skin color.
Yep.
And that's all it comes down to.
Yep.
Even though there were a lot of other African-American units that were deployed in the Pacific Theater that were responsible for hardened, quick action, that did a lot of combat missions. Everyone remembered these guys. They were the first, they were the original, they were the definition of what it meant to be an African-American soldier. And they were forgotten. 2 days after the unit returned home from World War II, which would be the 1st of February, 1946, the unit would be completely disbanded and mustered out of service. In literally 2 days' time, all of these men were just jobless. Ending the influence of one of the largest all-black units ever seen in the U.S. military. Now, today, the 369th Infantry is a thing again. They have been deployed overseas since the Gulf War. It is no longer just an African-American unit, but it is made up of just guys and gals from New York. Just the main bureaus. They are still amazing soldiers. It's one of the most highly decorated units we've ever seen overseas.
Tough motherfucker from, if you're from the, one of the five bureaus of New York.
Oh my God.
I'm talking about my friends here.
The Congressional Golden Medal would be awarded to the group in 2021 in recognition of the service and the fall of the soldiers that impacted the military culture overall. And that is one of the highest unit citations that is givable in the U.S. military today. And that's...
Nothing like racism to ruin a good thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Woo.
Welcome to America. Today is June 9th.
In the year 68, Roman Emperor Nero committed suicide. And you can learn more about him in episode 36. Vivimus Mirandum Est.
One of our spooky stories from last October.
Yeah. Ooh, that was really fun.
It was a good one. And a bi king. Oh my God, happy pride.
Yes. Oh my
a
God,
right.
Oh my goodness. Happy pride, Nero. And in 2013, Edward Snowden makes his identity public as the person who leaked classified NSA documents.
I wanted you to read that one because I feel like you'd have more insight on it, just like casually. Where were you when Edward sent them?
Okay. Where was I?
You're going to know.
I was in my junior year of high school.
Oh my God, you're so old. I was a sophomore. I'm just fucking with you.
Wait, 2013, yeah. June. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because I graduated in May of 2014.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't me.
I don't like the way you just looked at me.
Shut up.
When you said that.
Wasn't me.
Okay.
Wasn't me.
Now I get to share my two, but Brad doesn't get to look at them.
Fine. Looking away. Look at that fan. It's our only fan.
Oh my God, please stop.
Look at that light.
This one isn't a big one. The last one's a big one. 2014, again, happy pride, Laverne Cox became the first transgender person to appear on the cover of Time magazine. I want to include that because happy pride.
That's important.
And in 2022, some real-life Willy Wonka type shit went down because two people were rescued after they fell into a tank full of chocolate at the Pennsylvania factory, like the one, the M&M's Mars factory in Pennsylvania. They didn't sustain any injuries. The chocolate was only waist high. But they did have to cut a hole in the side of the tank in order to get them out.
It's getting worse.
The firefighters came in and they looked like down the tank and they're like, we can't climb down there and get them. So they had to cut a hole for it. Later, this was investigated by OSHA, obviously. And they were like, these employees weren't trained to be near the tanks. They were from like an outside company. They were like maintenance guys doing some work. And they legitimately just like fell into a tank full of chocolate. They were fined $14,500, which in my opinion is nothing compared to how much money Mars makes yearly. $14,000 when they made $45 billion that year. Yeah.
It's a lot of chocolate.
So yeah, I thought that I had to share it because, fun fact to you, one of my comfort movies is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the one with Johnny Depp.
Any movie with Johnny Depp's.
I just really like that one. I watch it on repeat. We can thank my father for that. So yeah, that's June 9th, today in history.
That's amazing.
Nero died. Laverne Cox became the first transgender person to appear on Time magazine. Edward Stone was like, hey, I leaked all that information. And two men fell into a tank full of chocolate. Happy Pride.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Strange for History. We hope you enjoyed learning about the Harlem Hellfighters.
I'd never heard of them until Brad suggested putting them into this season, and I'm always happy when those things we weren't taught in school. And I felt like this was a rather interesting story, and it's always good to shine light on institutionalized racism and Absolutely. Even direct racism. Jesus Christ.
You want to know where I learned about the Harlem Hellfighters?
What?
Battlefield 1. The video game.
No, I know what Battlefield is.
Shut up. You're supposed to not be video game-ish. But no, one of the first levels actually has you playing in through the tutorial as one of the Harlem Hellfighters.
Huh.
And whenever you die, it just switches to another one.
Nice.
It was a very, very cool. If you want to learn more with us, be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. That's going to be at Strange, the letter 4, History.
The letter 4?
The letter 4.
You can also follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Amazon, or really, wherever your ears are listening.
And of course, always enjoy the strange, weird things that make us
us.